This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 a.m. on this Tuesday, July 17th. Han, Joyce and Chuang keeping you company all the way till 10 a.m. Time now to take a look at global markets. And U.S. President Donald Trump, along with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin, have wrapped up their summit in Helsinki. Both appear to share more in common and reiterating them, which has perhaps drawn the ire of some parties stateside. Now, on the line, we have Tony Nash, chief economist and CEO of Complete Intelligence, coming to us live from Texas. Good morning, Tony. Let's do a postmortem here of that Trump-Putin summit. Did you perhaps notice anything that may have swayed your geopolitical risk meter?
No, I didn't actually. I mean, there's a lot of fussiness in the U.S. over it, but I didn't see any major issues. They got along. They've agreed to work on cyber issues, terrorism, Syria. They seem to be okay with competing for gas markets in the EU. That's now explicit. There were a number of comments about Russians intervening in the U.S. elections and other things. But, you know, you can look at the statements that have been made over the last 2 years. You can look at the statements from Barack Obama in September 2016 and again in December 2016. And I just don't really understand what the rhetorical fuss is about. Of course, intervening in other people's elections is a big deal. But rhetorically, there's so much pressure put on Trump to say the exact right thing. And I'm just unclear what that rhetorical issue is.
So, Tony, is there any signal coming out of this, or is this just pure noise? Is this more on headline risk, or could this perhaps have some sway when it comes to global matters? Because we note that there is this trade tension, or you know, set to become a full-blown trade war, and you know, allies are being formed. You've got the UK perhaps closing up with the US, China trying to gain support from EU officials. You know, where does Russia fit into all this? You know, help us separate the signal from the noise here.
Sure. Look, Russia and China have been getting closer, although I'm not convinced that that's a deep relationship. But when you talk about the trade war, I am convinced that that's going to wrap up in, say, September. And I have a couple of reasons for that. First is China's ag imports from the U.S. When you look at the soybean harvest calendar, and I know this is a bit esoteric, but The U.S. exports $14 billion of soybean to China. They're the number two provider. It's a massive crop for China. The peak import months for soybean from the U.S. are September, October, November, and December. So they cannot have that import schedule interrupted in China, or you will see a spike in soybean prices in China, and that would hit everyone's kitchen table. The other part of this is China's exports of goods for the U.S. holiday season start in September, really late August, but really September, October. If Chinese, you know, factories for electronic goods, toys, so on and so forth, cannot make that export cycle, you will have tens of thousands of workers protesting at the city level in China. The Chinese government absolutely can't let that happen. So I'm convinced that we're going to see the trade war wrap up in September or by September.
Well, Tony, interesting. Well, speaking about China, second quarter GDP came in at a reported 6.7%. That's the slowest rate since 2016. What do you make of that data?
I think it's garbage. I mean, I think our forecast showed Chinese GDP at about 5.8% this year. So we don't think that Chinese GDP is completely terrible, but we do see a slowing in the Chinese economy. When I speak to officials who are connected in China, they tell me that the economy there is really awful. Of course, the measures that are coming out of China, you know, it's this very straight line headline GDP figure, but when you look lower down, there are issues. So we expect China to have issues in Q3 and Q4 of this year, but we don't think that Q2 was as good as 6.7.
Tony, let's get granular. When you drill down a little bit more, which sectors are suffering the most from your intel on China?
Well, obviously, when you look at the overcapacity in say, metals, and other exporting sectors, that's where things are problematic. So China can attempt to go to Europe for these export industries, but you just can't create demand in Europe. Europe has its own economic issues. Europe is slowing, and incomes are already really problematic in Europe outside of, say, Germany and Netherlands and a couple of other places. So so these export industries and these hard infrastructure-related industries are not doing as well as many people think in China. The Belt and Road is not progressing, and you can see from, you know, recent Malaysian announcements, these things are not progressing as many people thought and had hoped. And if you saw over the weekend, China Exim Bank and China Development Bank both said that they need to start cooperating with other development banks globally on infrastructure initiatives. So what they're saying, if you read between the lines, what they're saying is they don't want to assume risk, the full risk on these already risky projects. So they're trying to get other investors into these projects because they can't have the whole thing on their balance sheets. So, you know, all of these plans, these grand plans that China's had on the infrastructure side and on the exporting side, they're just not happening. So things are backing up.
So, Tony, China says 6.7. You say 5.2. The trade war hasn't actually begun, 5.3. The trade war hasn't actually begun. What does all this spell for China and the countries dependent on them in the medium term?
In the medium term, I think it means you start to see some legitimate restructuring of the Chinese economy. I would expect over the next 2 to 3 years, you see bigger shifts in the Chinese economy. Well, you haven't seen shifts that big since, say, the 90s. I think you're going to start to see major shifts in the Chinese economy if there really is pressure and they really do commit to stopping their subsidy regimes for export markets. Then they're going to have to transform from an export-dependent economy to a domestically focused economy, because they cannot compete. Your average worker in the PRD is as expensive as your average worker in Malaysia. And so if those companies aren't subsidized, those export companies in the Pearl River Delta just can't, they don't have any benefit over Malaysian export companies.
Thank you so much for your time and insights. Great stuff there as always. That was Tony Nash, Chief Economist and CEO of Complete Intelligence, saying that he's confident the trade war will wrap up in September. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll take a look at some local developments in the business world. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.